Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastama Vidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
This story from 32 again. These elevated regions of divine love are inaccessible to a practitioner. Yeah, but I just wanted to get the flow, because he's going to give this is like a conclusion of the work, so just get the flow. Right, so the point is we hear about them, so there's inspiration to be involved. But they're inaccessible as far as tasting. So we may read them, we feel, some moods and emotions we may have not felt otherwise, but it's still, that doesn't mean it's accessible. It just means it's very inspiring, right? Because what we're doing is from Sambandha Gyan, then there's inspiration, right? But it's still Sambandha. It's not what the persons on this level are tasting, which is in Prayojana, right? So it's important to note that, because sometimes people will not make that very clear, you know? And one becomes bewildered that one is able to. But it's just like it's a touch more, but it's not what it should be. You know what I'm saying? You know, the girl has, you know, some little, you know, shiny balls and stuff like that. And she also has a 10-carat diamond. You know, it's a little more shiny to her, you know. So it's a little more valuable than the other stuff. But what it actually is worth, she can't comprehend. So does that make sense? It's not enough. So therefore, it's simply to understand the framework so that one understands where one is, what one's getting to, how. It's a consistent system, so the principles that are at work on the level of bhava and prema are the same ones that are working in the neophyte and the kanista. All the levels are working at the same thing. Each section is working in the same. Nishta works in the same way. Ruchi works in the same. Right? So there's a consistent element, so if we keep at that, then it will gradually bring us to this platform, which is the natural platform for the living entity. So it's not like, oh, it's too far, I can't get there. No, it's a matter of, it's inaccessible when we're on the platform of sadhana. That's why it's called sadhana bhakti. When it's accessible, that's called bhava bhakti, right? That's just the way it is, you know? You know, so it's not that it's a problem. It's just, you know, it's symptomatized by the particular qualifications one has, that level of purity, attraction, and attachment to Krishna. As those increase, it comes automatically. He cannot taste the transcendental fruit. The sadhaka bhakta is incapable of absorbing and manifesting the tempestuous and contradictory emotions generated by pure spiritual love within himself. Therefore, details of these topics have been deliberately excluded. Right? So he's just giving the outline here, so that you understand where it fits, you know, intellectually. The different symptoms of ruchi, ashakti, bhava, and prema described in this book are meant to give one the knowledge simply of how to recognize them. Right? Because means you could say up to nishta, it is specifically one's practice, right? Focusing on the regulation, following the rules, you know, all those elements like that. But ruchi, it's not a matter of ritual, you know. It's a matter of actual taste, right? You still have to put yourself in those environments that generate that taste. You still have to make sure you're chanting your rounds or at a kirtan or, you know, appreciating the deities or reading some book or associating with devotees. You still have to do that, so it's still a practice, right? So it's saying one can elevate oneself, you know, up to asakti, right? So then at that point, then after that, then it goes beyond that even more, because then the rules aren't the natural, how you say, springboard, or, you know, what's generating the natural response. There it's then just coming from our own absorption in the Lord. Does that make sense? So he sees, so these things aren't something you can just say that you have. That's the thing sahajas, you know, they roll on the ground and show so much ecstasy. I think one devotee was saying in Bangladesh, and somehow he went backstage when the guy was, you know, the kirtaniers, and they were actually taking chilies and putting them up their nose so that they, you know, they'd cry like that. So it's a good show, good show. Although there are sufficient Shastric evidences regarding these subjects, they have not been mentioned. Because if one bases everything on evidences, then the subtle path shown by Guru and Krishna himself may be encumbered by unnecessary and harsh deceptions. Right? Because you're trying to just go past. It means if we give all this, we have no idea of it. So we don't have any opinions. So we can just take it very nicely. But in the Shastric evidence that shows it, the evidence also does so many other things. So it may bring out something that we might, there might be some issue with. Right? You see that when the acharyas are giving evidences, sometimes he makes one very strong point and gives the shloka, the evidence. Then he moves on to the next point. He gives the same shloka. Right? Sometimes 2-3 times the same shloka comes up because it has all of this in it. Right? So just to avoid that, and because it goes, then we get bored easily, you know, and then there's always the thing, do I read the Sanskrit, do I not, you know, but it would be better if I did, but then if I do, then it gets slows down, but I want to get through this much, and so all that instead of focusing on the subject matter. So here he says, in this work, he's just given the points, because he says there's sufficient evidence everywhere. It's not like this is a new presentation of something. He's simply giving a condensation of what's already described in all the other works. Yes.
So this would also mean we have this tendency to look for loopholes? And
yeah.
Shastric evidence, that would also be...
Yeah, but it gives the foundation so that we know we have to do it. But the point is when you're dealing with Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prema, it's not because you have to do it. You know, you have to get rid of the anartas. You have to be in the association of devotees. You have to. So this you have to do. So you have to be, but these aren't you have to do. You know, so it's not that, yes, you have to come to the platform of Baba, otherwise, you know, it's like, you know, it's, that's not what's going to inspire you. What's going to inspire you is just the dynamics of the relationship, the experience. Right? So evidences are given for these lower. It's not that you don't have evidences. Rupa Goswami gives evidences throughout the whole nectar devotion. But the point is this is then discussing just that one verse of nectar devotion, that Shraddha to Prema. So the evidence is already given by Rupa, but he's trying to make it very clear what's happening, how it's unfolding, what's going on, so you can identify, because Rupa Goswami mentions it. But how you can actually identify it, you know, then that's what he's doing here. The essence of everything discussed in this book can be presented in summary form. Ahankara, false pride, has two characteristics. Ahanta, self-engrossment, and mamata, attachment. So here's presented in summary form. Ahankara, so it's false ego. That's the bottom line. When you identify yourself as servant of Krishna, then the whole devotional process starts. And when it's false ego, that I'm the body or I'm just the soul, I'm just Brahman, I'm not the servant of Krishna, then that will fuel material existence, right? Yes.
So projecting like our previous discussions on this topic, we can have two approaches. One is like decreasing the material ahanta, and second will be increasing spiritual ahankara.
Yeah. Well, no. There is no ahankar. Ahankar means false ego. You have ego, but you don't have false ego. Ego is I'm servant of Krishna. False ego is I'm not servant of Krishna. So therefore I'm the body, or I'm God, I'm Brahman. Right? So that will be these two. Self-engrossment. That's you know, I am the body, I am Brahman, this and that. And mamata is attachment. So I am the enjoyer of the material facilities, you know, pious works, or I am the enjoyer of the Brahman, you know, how you say, Brahmananda.
Like that. Mind.
Yeah, I and mind. So these two are the primordial sins, right? You know, that are left over. You know. But unfortunately it wasn't, you know, from associating with Adam and Eve, right? Before that, no, it's that we did it ourselves. You know, the problem was is Eve thought she was Adam. So that was the problem.
I meant to ask, like, those two approaches can be identified as direct and indirect, or...?
Direct and indirect. No, they're both pretty direct. Direct meaning that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Like that. So that's what keeps us here, are these two. So that as we break those down, then we free ourselves from the mundane. Does that make sense? Yeah, but as long as they're there, then to that degree, wherever it is, that will be. So that's what's also important, what was discussed before, is certain things go away quicker, certain things take longer. You know, certain by your nature of your conditioning, one area goes away easier, another area doesn't. You know what I'm saying? So let's say you have a manager, so he'll have the element of control, meaning mechanistic, right? And that sense of, you know, social standing, right? You know, that does that make sense? But he may not be have a problem so much of being overly emotional. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And he might, depending upon where it is, if it's coming in from business or from administration or like that, it may be just he's doing the right thing. And the other one is there's a profit to it. Not necessarily for himself, but there's a profit. You know, we preach, we make lots of devotees. We do this, we make lots of money. We do this, we're expanding the temple facilities. So even if it's not for themselves, it's still based on that principle of profit. Well, the other one is this is the right thing, we're doing the right thing, we're taking the right thing, we're expanding the right thing, make more available for more people to take advantage. You understand? Same thing. So therefore you need facility, money, devotees. But it depends on whether you're looking at it from the administrative or from the business. Right? Both can be working naishkarmya. Or if they have the sakam, then you'll see all the, you know, other problems come up. Right? As opposed to, let's say, an artist may not have a need to mechanically control the environment. In fact, it better someone else arranges the facilities. They just want to express. But attached emotionally, they'll be very attached to that. Right? The administrator might not need that everybody sits around and says, wow, this is fabulous, and all the emotional content and all that. Someone says it's a great job, then he knows, okay, it's working nicely. Okay, we're going in the right direction. But he doesn't need it for emotional. But the artist would need it for the emotional. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that different conditioning will mean that certain aspects of Krishna consciousness will move very quickly. Right? But other aspects may be slow. Does that make sense? So for the manager, especially administrator, then I am the controller will be harder to get rid of, but I am the enjoyer, not so much of a problem. If they're working on naishkarmya. Right, but the artist, I'm the controller, is not so much, except for the emotional environment. But I'm the enjoyer; that would be very prominent. You know what I'm saying? So, the point is we have to be able to accommodate that everybody's going to move in different areas at different speeds, and we shouldn't apply our specific criteria that we use for ourselves on others. We can help others with the realization we've gained from our own cultivation, but we shouldn't judge someone, especially if they're very different nature, by our criteria. Right? So that's the does that make sense? That's the idea, yes.
And if the person, so that would mean that the person, for example, the administrator, should he work more on the emotional side, or he should just continue his service?
He should be aware of it, but the main thing is going to be engaging what is of value to him in Krishna's service, because that's where he'll get, that is the service, that's where he'll be purified, that's where knowledge and detachment will come. Right? Because they don't involve themselves in the emotional because of the attachment to efficiency of management. Because as soon as you accommodate emotions, it creates all kinds of obstacles to efficient, seemingly efficient management. You understand? So it's actually an attachment to the efficiency of the management, you know, as opposed to, but as they reduce their attachment that it's got to go exactly the way they want, as quickly as they want, then they're willing to accommodate the emotions. Does that make sense? You know? And the other is that as they reduce their need to be the emotional center, they can accommodate others being, so they're trying to control that less. So does that make sense? So whatever is the position, one engages that. But one is aware, knowledge-wise, of the strengths and weaknesses, so that when an opportunity comes up, one takes advantage of that understanding. Because when that window is there of realization, then one should take it. Does that make sense? Right? You know, but it'll because it's practice, sadhaka, then it may take many, many times, many, many years, you know, for it. Because just that one's noted it, that's already a big start, right? You know, you could, in one sense, say that's, you know, 50%, just recognizing. But it may take for the other 50% some time, because it actually took a long time to actually recognize it. Like that. Does that make sense? You had something? No? Okay, so Tuka, ahanta, self-engrossment, and mamata, attachment. By becoming attached to the body and everything related to the body, the jiva is kept enthralled, right? Means as you're inspired as long as your identity is intact. You know, you think you're a great guy doing a great job, and someone comes along and says, you know, makes some comment about it, makes you feel bad about yourself, you're not inspired anymore. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is if our inspiration is coming of, I am servant of Krishna, and from the devotional, we won't be affected by that, because everybody's got something bad to say. You know, I mean, when Krishna was here, how many people had bad things to say about him? Right? And he's perfect. I mean, there is nothing wrong with him. Right? But they would make comments. And you see the devotees, Yudhishthira, nothing wrong with him. But comments are made. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. You know, the only complaint we see at the end of Mahabharata with Yudhishthira Maharaj is that element of the Dharma is so important that when it comes between Dharma and service, he'll engage the Dharma in service, but if the Dharma and service contradict, he'll take the Dharma. Right? So that's pointed out. But are any of his detractors making that point? No. They're very happy he's like that, because then they know what he's going to do. Right? So they're fine with it. So it's only when you're talking about progressing in devotional service beyond the simply engaging the conditioned nature, that's where it gets in the way. But basically, until you get to these advanced stages, it's not an obstacle at all. In fact, that's what makes you steady. That's what progresses because you're engaging the identity and attachments in the Lord's service. Right? So you're inspired by that, but at some point you have to be cultivating the inspiration coming from devotional service association of devotees chanting the holy name, because these other things are always going to change. And one day someone appreciates, the next day they don't. You know, for the exact same thing. One person will say, "This is great. This is your glory," and the other person will say, "That exactly is your fault." So it's like, you know, hey. By cultivating knowledge, these two characteristics of false pride are destroyed and the jiva becomes liberated, right? So it's through knowledge, then practice can be taken up. But if there's no knowledge, you can't practice, right? Abhideya is based on knowledge. When sambandhagyan is there and there's the inspiration of the emotion, then that will create the drive to do the work and the knowledge to do the work, right? But if there's only knowledge and it's not applied, right, or only the emotion without the knowledge, then there'll always be a shortcoming. So one has to have two. Right? Prema is defined as the state when the jiva thinks himself a member of the Lord's family and his eternal servant, and he worships only the Supreme Lord and his eternal associates. Right? He doesn't worship anything else. So even if he's dealing here, he'll see the different potencies, the different situations that in relationship with the Lord and his eternal associates. So he doesn't worship demigods, he doesn't worship the material energy, he doesn't worship the ordinary person. Right? The point is the person is so great and outstanding in these characters, those come from Krishna. And the particular people in charge of those are the devotees. Right? So that's what's actually going on. So they don't see anything else other than the Lord. Yes?
We can take also some understanding of those same principles from the level of Prema and appreciate how they are working at our level?
You can, just as long as you're careful to understand that this is a reflection of that, but because of our misidentification and all that, therefore by this ahankar, ahanta and mamata, that we are interacting with the Lord's energy, but for our own purpose, so it perverts it. The form of it's the same, you know what I'm saying? It's just like Lakshmi and Narayan, the masculine and feminine principles at work there. You know, that creates that husband-wife relationship. The same formulas are functioning in the material world between husband and wife. The difference is Vishnu's only thinking how to please Lakshmi, and Lakshmi's only how to please Krishna, without a future concept of benefit. I'll work to please him, and then you'll get some benefit for that. You know, like the husband thinks, well, did this, I'll get some, you know, brownie points for that, or I do this, and then, you know, for a few days she'll be really happy. You know, they're looking at it as a result rather than just to please. You know what I'm saying? So the problem comes is that depending upon one's devotion, on one's piety, one's training, one is, you know, closer to the applying the real mentality or farther away. But the mechanics of it will never change. Right, the reflection in the mirror will not look different. Right, does that make sense? That's just the way it is. Because there's a closeness, you want to see that they're happy. So when it's not going well for them, then you become angry. But in the material world, you're working with them, and it's not going the way you want, you become angry. So it looks like the anger in the spiritual world and the anger in the material world between the male and female, mechanics are the same, but the actual motive and mood is completely different. That's what Prabhupada says, like gold and iron. So you can't confuse there or think that yes, it's spiritual, or no, it's still on the spiritual is that you see that in connection to Krishna, because in the spiritual world they do. Right, so it's only being done to please Krishna. So the man is only doing his duties to please the wife and the family, to please Krishna. But if he's doing those things to please himself. He's pious, and he'll get good results, but he still won't be satisfied. Right? But he's doing it for Krishna, then he'll be satisfied. Not because the results are good, because he can never be satisfied with good material results, but because it pleases Krishna. Does that make sense? Is it, right? So the mechanics are there, but so you have to be very careful about showing. But the, well, we bring these elements out so that we understand it's all personal and it's all originally from the spiritual world. It's not something made up. Otherwise we think, well, that's one thing and this is another thing. And since we're here, we have to use, you know, what's practical here. We were reading before, that was, what was his name? Huntington. That's the coach, right? Hamilton. We're talking about the banks. He was the one that he was the first treasurer of the Americans. So he's the one that started the National Reserve, right? So he's very big. So he was a very major player. I think his signature is like second or third or something on the Constitution. So he's one of the major persons. But as we were pointing out, he's a deist. So he, you know, they're all good, you know, upstanding Christians, believe in God, but God is there. He created the world, it's his laws, and so he maintains the potency that the laws go on. But we have to use our intelligence and we have to make things happen here. You understand? So because of that, then they miss the point of its connection to the Lord. Right? So you can go on being extremely materialistic, but at the same time be God conscious. That's why Rupa Goswami distinguishes that the God consciousness is favorable and free from karma and jnana. Because it could be favorable, but still have karma and jnana. Or karma and jnana not be favorable. Right? And of course there's always not being conscious. That's always a popular, very popular. Okay. In truth, prema is indeed transcendental to material entanglement and more rare than liberation. Right? So in other words, liberation is common, right? Anybody who chants the holy name in Nama Bas is liberated. But prema, that's another story. That takes a little more time.
Desire for liberation is one of the kinds of asatrishna we discussed before.
Yeah, it's one of the... So it's... I think what it is that those names is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave. It's the same, it's just taking another angle that makes it really easy to catch. Because pious, impious. So asatrishna will be the impious. Hridai darbalya, weakness of heart, will be the pious. Because I'm the controller and enjoyer. So, like that. Does that make sense? You know, so those aspects. Then those offenses coming from devotional service, that'll be like the seva aparads and all those things like that. So that's in that category. But then that which comes from offenses to the Vaishnavas, that's in its own category, kutinati. Does that make sense? So it just makes it very clear and easy how to work on it. And then all the divisions of that, maybe that'll come up in the next chapter. It is described as being the pinnacle of all material and spiritual pursuits, the ultimate destination of all the scriptures. Right? So prema is what even the material activities are trying to get you to. Right? You're following Ayurveda. You're following the Shastra there. You know, you're doing it. It's a pious thing to do. It gets you a material result. But the purpose of it is actually to bring you to prema. You're supposed to see the workings of the Lord, its connection to the Lord, that real health is being on the platform of prema. A truly healthy jiva, you know, where all the, elements of existence, you know, because you have mucus, bile, and air, right, which will be, you know, your goodness, passion, ignorance, you know, which, you know, like this kind of thing, is balanced. So the Satchitananda is balanced properly. Then that is prema, right? And when, you know, Sat becomes overbalanced, then he comes to the level of, you know, the Brahmananda. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, the chit, I'm the controller, you know, like that. Ananda, I'm the, you know, so then, you know, the mamata, ahanta, all these things come up when it's out of balance. So then it's the perfect balance. So everything, material and spiritual, is meant to develop prema. That's the advantage of using shastra as the basis, as opposed to a non-shastric work. Because the non-shastric work is in no way the author is trying to get you to prema. Well, in the Vedic works, that is the point. Right? They may write it in a language that someone who's not interested would be attracted. Because if they're not attracted to Vedic literature, then definitely they'll only be attracted to non-Vedic literature, which is one is trying to avoid. Therefore, Vyasa's disciples wrote all these different philosophies, all the different personalities that were given charge of different areas, then spoke it in certain ways. You understand? Just to catch that audience, if someone will be connected to some aspect of the Vedic culture and therefore will progress. That's the idea.
All right. Does that mean the authors of the six philosophies, undercover preaching was their motive?
Basically. Like that. Because because we don't have a problem with Nyaya, just the conclusion that they come to is wrong, or Vaisheshika, any of those. We don't have any problem with any of those. You know, we follow, logic is defined by Gotama, right? The atomic theory that we were just discussing, Bhaktivinoda Thakura was discussing, that's Vaisheshika. It's just atoms, and because you have a particular conscious material desire, therefore the atoms are arranged by material nature. That's why it's the material cause. It transforms them into something you can see, like that. So you stop seeing, you stop having material desires, it stops manifesting that way. But where it ends is that their idea is they won't manifest means it won't be there. Our point is no, it'll be there, but your purpose in dealing with it is to please Krishna. Right? So it's different. Like that. So they take it up to a point and stop, but it's enough to keep people busy for lifetime. You know, Shankar, you break down and analyze the material energy so that you know what you're dealing with. Right? Like we can discuss this because we understand what a ahankar is. And then we're breaking that down. So that's Shankar. Right? But to say that, you know, you break it all down and then there's nothing left and then you merge into the Brahman, then that's basically a waste of time. Right? Yoga is to remember the Lord, but to get distracted by thinking that you are God, mystic cities, to think that the meditation process is based specifically just on the physical. These are, you know that being away from others as the only way you can be spiritual, all these things are the weaknesses of it. But it doesn't mean that we don't use the process of remembering the Lord. You know, samadhi is, you know, very much part of the, you know, bhav sadhana, the absorption, like that. You know, so how you can tell how absorbed you are, like that. So those techniques are there. Jaimini, then, the rituals and this and that, we follow the rituals. But the point is it's not that because we've done it that God has to give. No, we've done it and it's up to His grace to, like that. Because Jaimini can defeat all the other four. Like that. But then Vedanta, that defeats China. Right? But it can also be misapplied in the Brahman. So there's not a problem. So they give up to a point that's complete enough to keep the materialistic mind busy. You know. But for the devotee, then they understand.
Sometimes someone has that impression that, oh, we only read these scriptures because we belong to a certain group. They're not seeing that behind the other ones will be attachments which will deviate them from reaching prema.
Yes. The idea is that we stick to this because there's no other scriptures or books that give such essential. Like, as we were discussing, you understand the fundamentals of the six philosophies. There isn't a philosophy that a conditioned soul can create that's outside the elements of these six. It may not be purely one. It may be a mix of so many and this from here and that from there. But there isn't any more elements than this.
How about the element of nonsense?
No, but they deal with nonsense. They define nonsense. That's the thing. Is they take nonsense and break it down. You know? What is there? What actually causes it? You know? Like that. You know, it's just like improper intellectual contemplation, logical pointed out. You know? How do you know that it's actually logical? You know, because so much passes as logical. Because we are able to think of a few scenarios, so we're using intelligence. But why those scenarios? That's the problem. Right? That's where they miss. Right? Okay. A synopsis of the salient features of this book follows. It is formatted in a systematic way, tracing the gradual development of different spiritual conditions. Right? Goes through so you can see each one of them as they go. Basically, there's a progress, but also certain ones, when they're dealing with it, it shows it all the way back to the beginning and farther forward. You know, however much it can accommodate. Nishta only accommodates so much, so they only take it up to Ruchi. But when they're dealing with Bhava, then they're talking in such a way, some of the elements you go, but is this happening at Bhava? No, they're talking when in the context of Bhava, then you can understand the wholeness of it. You can see where it's functioning even lower. You know, basically down to Ruchi. You know, from there, and then it comes through. Right? So it's very, very systematic and gradual development. Good fortune transforms the false ego and gross material attachments. You know, yeah. So here you're taking false ego as ahanta and material attachments as mamata, right? Though ahankara accommodates both, but it's a matter of the forms of it. It's not that it's ahankara within ahankara, right? It means you have ahankara, then you have the element which is the false identity, which you call ahankara, and then the mamata. Does that make sense? Vedic will always do that. In other words, You name the group by which is the prominent element. Sometimes you use something that's generic. Does that make sense? The Western method is, let's say you have five things that all go in a group. So they'll try to pick a term that's outside those five that all of it could accommodate them. So it becomes confusing when you have Jyotish as a classification, and then as a subdivision, Jyotish is one of them. Right? But when it's like that, then you know that the one that carries the name of the general classification is the central feature. Right? Just like it's called Jyotish. Then you have math, you have astronomy, astrology, palmistry, omens, and prashna. So now, according to astrologers, astrologers. Astrology is the central science. And astronomy simply defines where the planets are, and that's based on math. So it's the side thing. That's Muhurta. But the main thing is your interpretation. But if that was the case, then that whole group would be called Jyotika. But it's not. It's called Jyotish, astronomy. Because the real thing is Jyotish. That's the hard science. Everything else is actually interpretive. So you may do a good job depending upon how advanced you are and non-attached. The mode of goodness, the more you're at that, you'll make mistakes. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you go to the astrologer and bring him some charts, you know, so does this look like a good match? And he'll look at it. It's okay. It's actually not a bad match. You know, it's like 70%, like that. But, you know, he has another match. It's basically just as good. But his friend's daughter, he said he'll help try to get her married. So like, this is okay, but why don't you check this one out? But that's not what he came for. So he's not actually doing his job as an astrologer. You know, matchmaker, maybe, but astrologer, no. You know, and then he tries to convince you of this, but it has some weaknesses that are this one's strong, this has strength. You know, so it could be, but why this one? You know what I'm saying? So these are weaknesses. You know, and he'll look at what's the weak part in the chart that you brought, and he'll look at all the good parts in the one that he's trying to sell. You know what I'm saying? So this is interpretive. That's why it's on a lower level. That's why astronomy, it's not, there's the planet, it's right there, and so many degrees in that zodiac sign and in that house at this time of day. It's that's the way it is. It's not a matter of interpretation. Does that make sense? So you're going to get that in here is when they've used ahankar, the false ego, as a sub element. It doesn't, don't get it confused with the main one. Like if you see one of them, then it includes what's the sub. But if you see it and it appears to be a sub and it has the other sub, then you know it's just taking, that's the prominent one because that gives rise to the other. If I'm the controller, then I'm the enjoyer. But if I'm not the controller, I'm not the enjoyer. So it's actually the main problem. But they go together. Right? Is that okay?
What is the meaning of good fortune?
Good fortune. Good fortune means devotional service. The association of devotees. You know, it's just like the Bhagavatam's talking about the, you know, the favorable winds, you know, of that devotional process, association of devotees, you know, chanting, you know, all these different things. That's good fortune. Because material technically doesn't have any good fortune. Its only good fortune is what connects to Krishna. It's just within bad. It's just like this. Let us say there was a situation you'd like to be in and a situation you would not like to be in. Okay? So you'll pick the one you'd like to be in, right? Now let us say that's not available. All that's available is the situation you would not like to be in. But within that, there's parts of it that won't bother you so much and parts that would really annoy you. Which you're going to choose?
Yes.
Yes. So that's what the scriptures are doing when it defines material piety and impiety. The piety is the better stuck in the dark well. You know, and the impiety is, you know, a worse situation in the dark well. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
But also the distressed seek to find Krishna. So in a sense you could say that the worse they're off, the better they might be off.
Can be, but then the problem is their taste will have them, they'll have a problem not being able to advance because of attachment to sin, which is one of the obstacles.
Yeah.
But the person who's good, he'll be able to situate nicely, but he'll be attached to piety. So it's both of them will create a problem.
Right.
You know, it's just like you see, is in general, though we're not being specific here, like you see, a pious, generally, or at least, yeah, we'll take it in a very general context. The Indian cult, the Hindu culture, is generally pious. So it's easy for them to take up Krishna consciousness. You know, they come to the temple. Even a person who doesn't know anything comes to the temple, bows down, and sits there, you know, because they know you're supposed to sit there and do some meditation or get some spiritual experience. So they just come in and sit down and all that, you know. Westerner walks in, kind of looks around and like this and that, nice, and walks out. And you see Indian walk in, they look very modern and everything. They'll walk in, bow down, sit there for a few minutes, you know, look around, enjoy the ambience, and then get up and walk out. Right? So they're pious, but you don't always see them get dynamically involved. Like the Westerners, then they're attached to sin. But because it's so distinct, they get very involved, but then the problem is, you know, they get, you know, distracted by the sin. Well, the Hindu won't get distracted by any sin, but he's not going to get any more dynamic. You know, he is, you know, Mr. Nice Guy now, and he comes to the temple and, you know, gives a little something for Janmashtami, and sometimes, you know, helps in the kitchen on Sunday, gives a little boga. And you come back after 10 years, he's doing exactly the same thing. Right? Does that make sense? So the Western, he comes in, he's washing pots. You come back after 10 years, he's the temple president. Or he's right out there in Maya.
Yeah.
You know, the, something's going to happen, right? It's not going to be static, you know. You understand? So it's just a matter of they each have their advantage and disadvantage, like that. But if that piety is, they're able to be focused, then you see, because of that culture, they're able to work with the broadest range of devotees and do organize things that work together. Right? I mean, if you think about from the Western culture, most, let's say they organize a Rath Yatra. Who's organizing? How many people? And realistically, in charge, makes all the decisions. Yes. One. That's it. And those guys that, you know, will do what he says. But you see, if you have, let's say, a pious Asian, they can get all other qualified people who are, you know, good managers, work out what has to be done, who's good at what, and work it out together. And many people will do it. So that's the advantage if they're able to be focused. If not, they'll be a nice guy. They're not going to go anywhere. Right? So that's where the strength is they have the cultural skills to work with others, while those attached to sinful activities don't, generally. You know, unless they're, you know, from historic families who are, you know, have learned to balance both, you know, like that.
This good fortune may also refer to causeless nature of devotion, like Bhagavata means Yadrichaya somehow or other.
Yeah. It means good fortune just means the mercy of the Lord or his devotees. That's basically. Because good fortune transforms. It's only through devotional service that this transforms. He's made that very clear. You can only understand this knowledge through devotional service. You can only see Krishna. You can only develop bhakti. Nothing happens without devotional service. Even intellectually understanding this can't. You explain this to the karmis, and they'll get inspired, and then they'll take one point, you know, out the window, and they'll apply it in some weird way that you wonder, why am I telling them this? You know what I'm saying? So does that make sense? You know, it's like Vaisheshika works with atomic theory and comes to the platform of self-realization, right? The Westerner understands atomic theory and they make a bomb. Right? So you could say both of them removes material existence. So that's the common element. But one ends in self-realization, and one ends more in a Buddhistic concept of vacuum.
Self-destruction.
Yeah, self-destruction. So it's self-realization is self-destruction. So that's why these things are written in that way that they don't actually even see what's there. So they can't appreciate it. So because otherwise, then there's more information given if they understand. It means Buddha is coming before, not this time, but in the previous time, because they've used the Vedic information to create spaceships that they go, mechanical devices that they fly to other planets and are actually able to go onto the planet and pillage. Right? You know, they're not happy just to go to the next village and walk off with all their, you know, cattle and everything. Now they got to go to another planet, right? I mean, they're trying to do it now, but, you know, it's not working. So the point is then it's more of a problem. Right? You know, here they're bothering only the animals here, but there they go to all the planets and bother all the animals. Right? Okay. Good fortune transformed the false ego and gross material attachments. These are replaced by self-knowledge and attachment to the ways of a devotee. Right? Self-knowledge, who one is, servant of Krishna and everything, and the ways of a devotee. It means service to do things nicely for Krishna. That's what a ways of a devotee is that's what he does. He does things to please Krishna. His actions are to please Krishna. Right? Because way indicates movement, you know, a path. So his path is that which gives a result for Krishna. You understand? That's how you don't have to define necessarily avideya. You can just talk about the goal, or if you talk about avideya, it automatically means the goal, because the goal comes from avideya, like that. So that's where sometimes you don't, or sometimes you say knowledge, you know, and activity. Like here we're saying the knowledge and the activity and the results. But that means that you have to have the sambandha gyan to be involved in the activity, because that gives the result. Or you can define sambandha and avideya, and you get the result. Does that make sense? Or the knowledge used in avideya and the result. But either way, it's It's inferring all three, yes.
For a devotee, isn't Sambandha, Videha, and Prayojana the same? Servant of Krishna, service to Krishna, more service to Krishna.
Yeah, means the result for Krishna. Means, yeah, servant of Krishna, service to Krishna, and the results for Krishna. So he calls seva, sevya, and sevaka. Right, so we're the sevak, we're the sevak. The seva, but he's the sevya, who the service is for. These are terms that are used in the Pancharatra for deity worship. Mm-hmm. Seva, service, sevya, who the service is for, and sevaka means who performs the service. So it's again the same thing, but the emphasis is put there because of the, you know, the ritual, so you'll see the service being done. Right? These are replaced by self-knowledge and attachment to the ways of a devotee. This consciousness becomes firm, right? If you're attached to the way, that means you're attached to the method that gets the result that's for Krishna. You want the result for Krishna. That's the prayojana. So you're attached to the way that gets it for Krishna, means by doing it for him. But that also means you do it proper knowledge. Otherwise, how do you get a good result? But you've started with Krishna. That's what makes it superior, instead of starting with yourself. This consciousness becomes firm, and the devotee thinks, I shall become a householder Vaishnava and worship only the Supreme Lord. Ultimately, the cause of such a conviction is the saintly soul's compassionate nature. Right? Ultimately, so the conviction is coming from the devotee, so there also means your good fortune. Right? Or that conviction is his compassion for others. Like that. Because then in that state, you know, as he takes care of the family members, he can host all kinds of facilities, he can give in charity, he can do so many things and benefit a large amount of people. But generally most people think getting married is for themselves. You know, now it's my own time, you know, I say, you know, like, yeah, my space or my time, you know, like that. But here's the idea is the compassion is that now I can, you know, have a very natural opening to help so many people, right? In the direct application, one can say, because the preacher, he'll travel and preach, but you have to apply it yourself. You have to generate your facilities, you have to apply it, like that. But the householder, he's making facilities and can apply it, you know, therefore create. You know, he'll have the home programs, you just have to come, right? Like that, you know, he gives money to the temple, they can do things with it. Does that make sense? You know, he sees the personal development of his family members, right? The people who come to his program, you know, he'll engage them, but there's only so much he can do, right? They'll come and have nice harikatha, chanting, they'll take prasad, worship the deity, you know, and in between moments, you know, the men sit with the men, the women with the women, they'll discuss things, you know, practical realizations. So, you know, there's that, but still, once they walk out the door, they have to take care of it themselves. But after they've walked out the door, your family's there so you can continue that cultivation. And in fine points that you won't get into a discussion. You know, it's like the neighbor, you talk to him about this and that, engaging everything in Krishna, and there's some common points. You know, maybe a general point of, you know, emotional support or discipline of a child or a certain interaction with the wife or at work, you'll talk. But in the family, you're sitting there, you're brushing your teeth, you know, someone else in the family's brushing their teeth, and there might be something that they're missing there. You know, it's like they're brushing their teeth, the stuff's running down their elbow and drops on the floor, so they step on it, and now that gets all over, and so the house is not, you can point that out. You can't point that out to your neighbor. You know, it can't be in the discussion, hey, do you let, you know, toothpaste drip down your elbow and therefore contaminate your whole house? I just want to know because I come to your house and I don't want to bring any home, you know, like that. You know, so you can't discuss these things, right? So there's so much opportunity, but generally our reason for it, that's why it says ultimately, is our own attachments, our own needs, right? But ultimately then that aspect is there, then it brings it to, you know, then it's a great value. It's a glorious situation. That's when there's no difference between any of the positions in the Vedic society, right? When the purpose is that naishkarmya, you know, element, then there's no difference. But if you're not dealing with the naishkarmya, then those that naturally are, your brahmacharis, your sannyasis, then they're going to be superior. You know, your Brahman over the Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. right? Kshatriya over the ones below that because of its basis on Shastra. Right? You know, the Vaishya is superior to the Shudra because he generates facility. Right? Because Shudras don't function if there's no facility. Right? Hard to, you know, play a musical instrument if there's no musical instrument. Right? Does that make sense? But, you know, you're walking down the road, see something lighting on the side of the road, you can pick it up and make money out of it. You know what I'm saying? You'll create the facilities. Right? The Kshatriya will create the environment that's protected that the Vaishya can work. You know, and that the Brahmin can work. Right? That the Brahmin gives the knowledge by which... So in this way, then, there's the superiority. But as far as when it comes to application and devotional service and Naishkarmya, there's no difference. Each one of them is valuable in the mission and to take you back to Godhead. Is that right? That's why Varnashram becomes so confusing for many. You know, well, we just care for, you know, devotional service, so we don't care for Varnashram. Or Varnashram is very important, no one's following it, so that's why things aren't developing. But neither are seeing, really, its connection to the Lord. Right? Yeah. Now, Paramartiki Shraddha enters the heart very slightly when he becomes eligible to begin the process of pure devotional service. Later, by constantly associating with saintly persons, his slightly Paramartiki Shraddha deepens and Bhajana Kriya is initiated. Right? Okay. Paramartiki means you're engaged in the, you know, the higher you know, paramartha is the higher, not transcendental. So it becomes a bit when you become eligible to begin the process of devotional service. So in other words, Shraddha, that begins the process because there's transcendental Shraddha, something is there. Right? And so then, by associating with the devotees, Sadhu Sangha, then it deepens and then Bhajana Kriya, he takes it up with, you know, conviction. As long as Bhajana Kriya remains anishta, regulative, not spontaneous, and his ahanta and mamata are partially projected into spiritual activities, but he is still fully aware of the material world. Right? Okay, so then here is very interesting to think. Bhajana Kriya is anishta because ahanta and mamata are projected into the spiritual activities. I am the temple president. I am the, you know, I am the good grihastha. Yes.
But anishta means unsteady, right?
Yeah. So here also is we have to remember how far nishta goes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? One is you have the thing there, but because it's, as we mentioned, when the majority or when the prominence is there, then it takes on that name.
Mm.
So it's nishta, but it doesn't mean that nishta, there still isn't conditioning.
No.
It's just that its majority is not conditioning, right? Mm. Before nishta, majority is conditioning.
Mm.
So your Bhajana Kriya is not stable.
Yeah.
But when it's predominantly predominantly, you know, Krishna conscious, then it's fixed. It doesn't mean that, as we discussed before, is what I had heard, that 40% is still not there. But the point is because of that, it'll go quicker. And once it gets the taste, then it, you know, becomes so quick.
It just has a natural tendency to go towards the spiritual.
Yeah, it just starts going, yeah. The example is given like the dry leaves in a storm. They're just, you know, blown away. Before that, there's no storm and they're not dry. You have to come and actually pick them up. You can't sweep them. They stick to the ground. When they dry, then it's easier to sweep them up. But here there's a storm. It's sweeping them up for you. You just chant Hare Krishna because of that it's just going away. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's there. So always there's that overlap. By constant association, his slightly paramartic shraddha deepens. But then we're also seeing in Bhava Bhakti that it's by association then that attachment to Krishna deepens. You know what I'm saying? The process is the same, but here it's just you're beginning the new stage of associating the devotees, learning that. Then you get the conviction to take up Bhajana Kriya. Then it becomes fixed. right? So his false ego, he's proud of his position. You know, he identifies with the position. You know, I am a sannyasi, I am a guru, I am this. So these get in the way, like that. Or mamata, that it's mine, you know, like that. No, it's Krishna's. It's my temple. How can they, you know, come in here and try to take over? I've been here 20 years. Well, they weren't even devotees then. Where were they when we had this problem in, you know, 19, you know, how you say, 37, and before that, you know, like that, in 1853, you know, that was a really big one. Where were they, you know, like that, you know, so, that's mamata. It's true. Now, who are they to come in and do that? But it's still the element of mamata is the drive for saying that. You know? Otherwise, it would be great. You know, you have all these ideas and your enthusiasm and you're coming forward and you want to do something nice to the temple. That's great. But why now when everything's going nicely? Because you've been in this community when things weren't going nicely and you weren't coming forward. So that, because that would mean work. And you'd have to do it because there wasn't anybody. But now that you see there's people and money, now you're happy to come in and tell them what to do and stand back and then think you're in charge. Is that correct? Because that doesn't have the mamata behind it. That's just facts. You know? You understand? So that's the point. So the other one worked until about... Well, it worked nicely until... really nicely to 82, but about around 86, 87, then it didn't work anymore. No one was buying that one anymore because they decided their mamata was more important than yours. You know, because authority, I mean, before there was the authority, so if the authority had it, okay, his is greater than mine, okay. But now it's like everybody's equal, so hey, what do I care about yours, you know? Yeah. Yes.
Projection of ahamta and mamata on spiritual activities can mean one is recognizing oneself as Krishna's servant.
No. This means, because that's the opposite. Means that's what you're trying to do. But what he's saying, that's what makes it. That's what purifies it. Makes it good. The problem is where it's in its state of attachment. Then it comes to means because. He projects it into, like that. He says, as long as Bhajan, you have to see the wording, as long as Bhajan Ki remains anishta, his ahanta and mamata are partially projected into spiritual activities. But he is still fully aware of the material world. Right? So he's aware of what's happening, but at the same time, that's still there. Right? Does that make sense? So you're looking at it from there. You can understand they're talking about the negative. Well, before he was saying is that then the ahanta is I'm servant of Krishna and the mamata is everything's for Krishna. Right? So if that comes up, then you see this other goes away. Then it becomes spontaneous. He also throws in the thing of the spontaneity. Right? And so spontaneous here means it doesn't have those, so you're naturally absorbed. But it's also important to note that the spontaneous doesn't have to be specifically detailed. What I'm saying? This is also the difference between we see when the acharyas describe it, especially we see Rupa, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada. When they're defining spontaneous, it doesn't mean that you have already chosen what rasa you want to be in and this and that. It doesn't necessarily... That is all. That is theirs. That's your prominent. But it can also be generic. Just you're inspired to do the devotional service to please Krishna rather than to do it because you're supposed to do it. These are the rules. This is the bhajan. Right? Does that make sense? So here he's looking at that. Not that, oh, see, someone only Raghunuga Sada can get beyond. So then, technically speaking, here, someone in Nishta is on the spontaneous platform. So the Madhyamadika means the spontaneous. Right? But it can also be that, you know, they're just very dutiful and follow the rules very nicely, so they'll get through it very nicely. So they'll be very steady because of that ability. You know what I'm saying? So you have to see the situation. That's why analysis, to be able to distinguish. Does that make sense?
Means, spontaneity means like to come to our natural state.
Natural state, but meaning that you like doing it because you're inspired. You like cooking because you like cooking. You're not liking cooking because you're supposed to do it or because the science of cooking is there. You know, it has to be done. You know the science, but you're inspired to cook. That's spontaneous. You know? Does that make sense? You know? But the point is when that's always there, then you can say it'll be nishta. If it's occasionally there, it's not. Like the new bhakta in the halava, you could say he has spontaneous attraction, right? But Monday morning, he doesn't have spontaneous attraction, right? You know, and Tuesday also, Wednesday, you know, it's not so unspontaneous. Thursday is starting to look good. Friday, you know, starting to take out. Saturday, spontaneous. Sunday, fully spontaneous, right? So it's not steady. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that natural. You're not doing it because of the rule. You're doing it because you like. You go to Mangalarti because you like going to Mangalarti rather than you're supposed to go and Brahmahurta is the best time for spiritual life and this and that. And if you don't go, you're not going to get a ticket for breakfast. You know, like that. You know? And, you know, you might not pass your Bhakti Shastri exam, you know, because, you know, like that. That's not why you're going. You're going because you like it. The other ones are regulative. Yes. And it pleases Krishna, but still, then it's on the positive side, but, you know, not that on the negative, but it's on the positive side, but is it that you like pleasing Krishna through following the rules? Or it's just that it pleases Krishna, that's why you're doing it? Yes, but still, you do have a glorious Vaidhi sadhana that you can continue right on through until bhava. Right? In other words, you want to please Krishna, he's given these rules, you like to please him through the rules. It's very clear, it's very straightforward. You know you're doing the right thing for Krishna. Like that. You understand?
Let's say you like the morning program, not specifically the evening.
So it means it's partially. Because the point is, that's what we were saying before of taste. There's two kinds of ruchi. One is where certain conditions you'll be inspired and certain you won't. So therefore, the morning program, you'll be inspired, but the evening you won't. But the point is that the you know, there's still kirtan, there's still deities, there's still association of devotees, and the amazing thing is by the evening, the Bengalis have actually woken up. You know? So, unless that's the problem, you know, they're bouncing off the walls and all that. You like the morning, which is a little bit more, you know. But it's like they're asleep at Mangalarti, slight glimmerings at Guru Puja. Like that, but you know, but the evening like that, they're fully awake. You know, yeah. Okay. When Bhajana Kriya becomes nishta or concentrated and more spontaneous, right? He's saying more. He's not saying you are raganuga sadaka. He's saying more spontaneous. But that becomes, you know, more of an element, that there's more natural just performance of the devotional activities. Then mundane engrossment is practically destroyed, because it says here, but as he is still fully aware of the material world, because he's engrossed in it. But here it becomes practically destroyed. Right? Isn't that what he said?
Yeah, practically destroyed.
Yeah, practically destroyed, because that's what the Bhagavatam is saying. By constantly hearing, then you become steady and the material, you know, taste for material is practically destroyed, like that. It means there's something left. It's only called something left because we're comparing it to prema, where there won't be anything. So therefore, in prema, especially when you get into the subtler and subtler, it means there can't be any trace of anything like that, right? But as far as good qualities go, you're not going to get much on the material platform, anything better than, you know, it's like that. Because there it's just, you know, his material, his understanding of the world and desires for the world, you know, an elevated person on the material platform, he's willing to be cooperative and allow others to also enjoy rather than just control it all and take it all for himself. You know, that's all. You know, and he's in a position of where he could command more facilities, but he doesn't. Right? For the guy who has nothing, you know, and is very liberal, no one's saying, wow, he said he's really, you know, always cares for everybody. No one's saying that, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. When Bhajana Kriya becomes nishta, or concentrated and more spontaneous, then mundane engrossment is practically destroyed, and the devotee experiences the profundity of spiritual consciousness. Like the depth of just what it means, Krishna consciousness. Because we're appreciating it because you're out of the material, but then because it's not appreciated so much, sometimes one can get distracted by the material. Right? Because it's only being a suffering in the material platform and then coming in contact with the spiritual, you see the difference. But here it's within the spiritual, you're able to appreciate how profound it is, how deep it is. Right? So then it just becomes more self-inspiring. Is that? Ruchi, taste, then increases the attachments for internal spiritual development, and material life becomes distant and only a matter of utility rather than of necessity. That's the point. But distant doesn't mean that you can't utilize it. Right? Prabhupada is very expert at utilizing the material. That's the meaning of utility is the principle, not attachment is the principle. No, utility is the principle. Right? Or, you know, staying away from it as far as possible is the principle. Right? No, utility. So it's only a matter of utility rather than necessity, because it's utility. In other words, what before you were performing the activity because of need. Right? One is working for the family because you need the family. Right? Or let's take another one. Let's take your occupation. Is that you like your occupation, or just the feeling of you hate your occupation and life's so bad and all this because you hate everything. But in other words, you have something that you need. So it's the prayojana, so it's the drive behind why you're going to do anything. It turns into utility, just it's the elements of the field that you're using in Abhideya, because your need is to please Krishna. Right? So the drive becomes different. So the other thing is you're using the utility as, you know, to get your result. But much of the time people are so, due to lack of knowledge and their desires are so great, they're engaged in activity without understanding actually how to use the thing. They feel that their emotional need and drive is all that's required. Does that make sense? You know, just I want to do it, that's your qualification. But that's not enough.
It's like the American movies.
Yeah, but there it's always successful.
Yeah, but that's the illusion.
Yeah, that's the illusion. Like the Maverick, he doesn't know anything, he's a complete wimp, and then they come in and, you know, whatever it is, you know, eat his goldfish, right? You know? And then having eaten his goldfish, then he turns into this, kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, Rambo, RoboCop, the Terminator, and wipes out all these, you know, things like that when before, you know, he couldn't, you know, use a knife, you know, to cut a potato without, you know, cutting his finger, right? You know, so, yes, that's America. That's the greatness of America. Unfortunately, they're getting so far from the illusion, because at least before they kind of did those things, you know? You know what I'm saying? They didn't know what they're doing, but they went in there and, you know, won the war, you know, about that. And now it's kind of like, you know... You know, because if you think about it, you know, the talk about reducing the troops and everything, like that, having a guy is much cheaper than having a cruise missile. You know, that costs millions and millions of dollars. But, you know, you could have a lot of people in the army for 2 years and, you know, for that much money. You know, so before it was, you know, $20 million worth of guys ran over the hill and, you know, got shot or landed on the beach, you know, and now they just send in this one little missile, right? So the problem is before they were more committed and dedicated, and now they're not. So the missile is more committed than the guys are. So, you know, it sounds like, you know, yes, we're trying to save American lives. It's that, you know, these American lives are useless. And the machine works a lot better. Right? So you don't see that theme coming up as much as it used to. It was very popular before. Okay. Okay, does that make sense? Because that's the whole thing of what Varnashram means to us. So the persons who Varnashram is a necessity are always going to have more problem because of their attachment. Right? Either it's a necessity, meaning in the negative, that you don't want to do it because what you want is, you don't see how it's provided by Varnashram. Or you see the Varnashram is going to make the world perfect and a great place to live and all that kind of thing. But no, when Varnashram is a utility, then it will work very nicely for the devotees. Right? The necessity may be there, that might be the drive, but you have to be able to see this utility that's the functioning point. Because the need has to be, it's for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Need meaning prayojana. Attachment and need are the same. Just attachment means that, you know, just as our need is that when it's driven. You know, it's like attachment for when it's moving from Prajumna to Aniruddha, right? But need is when it's moving from Aniruddha to Vasudeva, right? And so it's kept dynamic there, is because then in applying the Abhideya, then you're seeing that it's going towards your need,
right? And you don't see that with attachment?
Well, you don't necessarily.
It's more identity.
Yeah. It's just like this. Let's say the parent is, they're attached to their child, but they can't see, and so they're trying to deal based on attachment, but they can't see that their teenager is getting more and more annoyed with them. Mm. So it's not working. But if there's a need to make that there's an interaction, you know, I'm saying, of course, there's need that they want to interact, but when they're looking at that side of it, you know, why do they need it? What do they need? They need, you know, that nice this and that. So nice is going to happen because you're nice.
So it's less, you know, based on...
Yeah, so it's a little bit more practical.
Yeah.
You know, it's the practical side of prayojana, while attachment is the, you know, the emotional side. You know, because it's fulfilling attachment, you know, is what makes you happy, right?
Generates more,
yeah, attachment. But the point is, if you can define what are your needs as opposed to what are your desires, because people can't do that. But you say attachment and desire, most devotees won't know the difference. But desire, it's interesting. You don't necessarily need it, but attachment technically means you need it. So they can't tell the difference. So when you analyze it, then that's why it says, what is it? There's a saying about... You can't always get what you want, but you can get what you need. Right? Okay. Like that. Because that you can actually work for. So if you identify that, it makes life a lot better. And then you apply the utility of what material skills get it. Skills and facilities. Right? So for the devotee, is having material skills and facility is useful, you know, for an occupation. But as a goal in life, and if you have it, you know, you have your degree and you have this and that, therefore now everything's perfect, that's for those in illusion. No, it's only a utility. When you have it, you still have to work with it. But they think, just because I have it, now everything will be fine. Like that. There's a law. I don't know if it's still there, but it was when we were there in the 70s and 80s. You get into auto rickshaws, you know, and you know, I mean, you've been in auto rickshaws around India, but a lot of times you wouldn't necessarily consider that they are your more refined sections of society, right? But in Assam, you get in the auto rickshaw, the guy's dressed nicely, you know, and speaks English, you know, looks bright and, you know, clean and everything, you know, not just in a gumshoe that, and, you know, doing something wishy that, or, you know, grumbly or like that. And so after getting in a lot of them and noticing that that's all that's in these, then we ask one, Rishi, I says, how is it all that, you know, you're educated and this, Are you educated? I mean, what's happening? He said, no, yeah, you have a degree. Like that. So why are you driving a rickshaw? He says, because there's so many people with bachelors that there's no job. So the government made a rule. Only those with graduate with a degree can drive a rickshaw. That way then they're all, you know, they can get a job. So, hey, you know, so... it works in Assam, right? Okay, yeah. Yes.
You were mentioning this distinction between attachment and the... Mm-hmm. Many times when we want...
They're the same thing.
Okay.
But I'm just saying is one is like bringing out is like the emotional, and the other is that you're seeing the more the practical and are willing to work for it. If it's a need, you'll work for it. If it's attachment, you may not work for it. You know?
So my question is... Many times we cannot make a clear distinction. What, for example, someone thinks he needs a house, but it's actually the protection that he's looking for.
Yes.
So we're not able to distinguish what we're looking for.
Yes, yes. But also is that there's technically a need to have a house. Grihastha need. Brahmacharis, they don't need, but Grihastha needs, because the idea in Grihastha is that then you want to make that identity stable or secure. So the house will create that security, because the household life requires certain facilities. Like Brahmachari doesn't need anything, basically. You know, he can put it anywhere. But the facility, let's say you want to take care of your social life, you want guests. You know, you have to have places to sit and things to, you know, serve them off of and to cook with and facility to go to the market and, you know, a job to generate the money for it. So you have to have some place to store all that, you know. Otherwise, where do you keep your tax returns? Where do you keep all this? Where do you keep your insurance for your car? Where do you keep the extra key? All these things. So you have to have the house. But the point is if it's seen as utility, then it doesn't, it's not an obstacle. But if it's still seen as one's need, you know, then there'll be a problem. Because then emotional involvement, and then if you don't get what you expect from it, then you feel it's a waste of time. No, it's only a facility. You know what I'm saying? Ruchi taste then increases the attachments for internal spiritual development, and material life becomes distant, only a matter of utility rather than of necessity. This attachment for the spiritual enhances the inner spiritual experiences to an intense level, thus diminishing material experiences to insignificant. Right? So then even you're getting experiences, but they're all spiritual now. You're seeing them all in connection with the Lord. Right? Because you're utilizing them to get the result for Krishna. It doesn't change the position. That's the thing, is that we've noticed that he specifically uses a householder to define. Because if he used a renunciate, then most people would say, oh, that's for them, but I have a different... No, but he uses the grihastha. Because then it has a more general application. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakura established, because up to Bhaktivinoda Thakura they were all renunciates, basically. You know, at least in what was contacting the, you know, at the time, the Western culture and all that, or the other culture. Like that. You did have big grihastha preachers in the Shamanandi line. You know? It means you had Narottam, Srinivasa, and Shamananda. So his disciples, Shamananda and his Rasikananda. But it was just in Midnapur and Orissa, North Orissa, South Bengal, those places. Then all the then it's very big and going on very nice. They're all grihasthas and everything like that. But as far as dealing with the West, Bhaktivinoda Thakura then dealt with it in that way. So he's the grihastha, right? It's not that, you know, he has no kids, so therefore you can do it. You know, or okay, you only have one kid or two kids. No, he had 10 kids. So no one can say, you know, you don't have kids, and that's why you can be out preaching, right? Right? And then he says, well, okay, you have that, but, you know, you don't have a job. No, he had a job. Not only that, he was the district magistrate. right? So that's busy. So they can't say anything like that. So he's showing how to be a grihastha and be fully absorbed into your devotional service. Having that being established, then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur can then establish the mutts. Originally, though, he established, you know, they called it the mutt, but it was the temple. You know, it was the place in Calcutta. There were four grihasthas. They had four grihasthas stayed there. So a place for guests, place for the preaching, like that. I think a room on top where he stayed, and it was grihasthas. And only when I think one of the grihasthas' wife died, and then some other things, and time went on, then the temple became just for brahmacharis and sannyasis, right? Like that. But otherwise, originally it wasn't. So it's not a problem. It's just that, you know, that facility then worked very nicely. Okay. When Bhava enters, also we see here is then very nicely, when attachment for the spiritual enhances the internal spiritual experiences to an intense level, thus diminishing material experiences to insignificant. So they're talking asakti there. But it's the same thing of that when ruchi then increases the attachment. So taste increases the attachments. Right? And then when that attachment, you know, becomes intense, right? So you increase the volume and then you deepen it. So you're always doing that. Increasing volume, deepening. Increasing volume, deepening. Right? Like Prabhupada, you know, the book is doing, double it, you know, more temples, more devotees, more books. And then around 65, then he said, now boil the milk. Now deepen it. You know, now it's big enough, the machinery is good. If you just continue like that, you'll be making tons of devotees doing, but you don't have to increase it beyond what that is. Now deepen it. So everyone should start studying and understanding what... Because before it was a new thing, so you had to spend all day trying to figure it out. Now they've got it down. They have a program that makes devotees, distributes books. You know, the temple program is running. So now devotees can use that extra time to study. Right? So Prabhupada was expecting now... So deepen it. Boil the milk. That means boil it down. You're getting rid of the water. Right? Getting to the essence. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the idea. So it's always increasing, deepening. So you see there is that, you know, is there bhajana kriya, then it, you know, increases the point, you know, and then nishta deepens, right? Then ruchi starts to increase it, and then asakti deepens it, right? Bhava increases it, and then prema deepens it, right? And then from there it just keeps getting, it does both at once, right? It's not able to, but good it wasn't on the side of his head. When Bhava enters, spirituality is at a stage where devotional sentiments are continuously intense. And material phenomena sometimes appears faintly distant and at other times totally non-existent. Sometimes faintly distant, the other times totally non-existent. Right? So the point is now, just there it gives this, because we're talking about moving Shraddha to Prema. Okay? But now, if you were going the other direction, not from Prema, but from Bhava on down, what has to happen? It says in this sentence, you reverse what's going on here. Sometimes faintly distant and other times totally non-existent. So from being faintly distant, you notice it. Wow, hey, check that out. Then it goes from being faintly non, you know, like that, which could be totally non-existent, faintly. Then it moves back into diminishing material experiences to insignificant. Right? And so, you know, like Brahman and Prajapatis, and then down to, you know, utility rather than necessity. Like Prajapatis, their household is out of utility. You know what I'm saying? Indra's attached to sex. The Prajapatis aren't specifically attached to sex. They're attached to being the fathers of mankind, the fathers of the universe. You know what I'm saying? It's not the sex part. Indra is sex. Right? And then it drops down more, where Ahanta and Mamata are projected into, you know, your spiritual, your pious, and then it drops down. You understand? So that's how it goes the other way. So so we notice in each of these stages, it's talking about how the material absorption is getting less and less. So it's a matter of when you notice the material energy, that's the meaning of jiva. He can either look at spiritual or look at material. Right? He's in a neutral position. But both are there. That's the meaning of tatastha. So that means it's faintly distant. But one could ignore that. And by the association, because we see going forward is always in the association of devotees. So we take advantage of the association of devotees in bhava. Then from faint distance, it's to non-existence and it moves to prema. Right? But if one is taking it and noticing it, then the association of the devotees isn't the prominent element. So you reverse the process. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's how the jiva gets here.
Yeah.
Right? That's why bhava, you know, many people jump up and down about bhava. For us, bhava is just, we finally got back where, you know, where we left.
Yeah.
Now we got to keep going and get the prema, you know? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, you know, you're out of the ocean, now you're back on the boat where you fell into the ocean from, but you got to get to the other shore, right? You know, you're trying to get to, you know. Does that make sense? So that's why bhava is presented, but it's not played up so much. It's still taken, it's not like you see all the really, really relishable things were discussed on in prema. Though it was indicating, you know, the levels within even down to sakti and like that. But it was all there. But in bhava, it was just showing the mechanics of moving through these different things and how, you understand? Because that stage is not something that we would be attracted by. Because that's the stage of Brahmananda. Right? But it's in connection to Krishna, so it's not, so it's that's, you know, that Atmarama stage is not seeing as only understanding Brahman, it's your understanding the person. So instead of being Mukti, it's Brahma Bhuta. Right? Because we see Brahman as Krishna. Right? But we're also trying to get past that stage that it shouldn't just end up as Shantaras either. You know? Yes?
Can somebody be on Brahma Bhuta and not have Bhava?
Can they be on Brahma Bhuta and not have Bhava? And what do you suggest you would have?
Just some appreciation.
Appreciation of?
I mean, like Vaishnava Brahma Buddha. So appreciation of the Lord or his qualities. Or
he would or he wouldn't?
He would.
Yeah, but that's what we're talking about, Shantaras. So we're trying to make it dynamic. Like that. That's what we're teaching. So it means, since you can go beyond that, why stay there? It means you come to that prema, but it'll just get the prema. But it'll be based kind of on that kind of, that will be the kind of like the scene. You know, the environment. It doesn't go beyond. Does that make sense? Well, the dasyaras, prema, and it can go beyond, I think, one or two. Parental go a few more than that. Then conjugal would go all the way up. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You know, since something that's being offered that's never been offered before, why not take it? You know what I'm saying?
In his question, there seems to be an inherent dichotomy between Brahma Bhuta and the platform of bhava. Is there a difference?
No, there's no difference. That's the point. Is bhava, then you call it Brahma Bhuta. Liberation, then you just call it mukti. Right? It means the Sayuja Mukti. Then that's it's just used mukti. They're on the Brahman platform, but you generally don't refer to them as Brahma Bhuta. You could, but a real Brahma Bhuta is a devotee, because he's the only one satisfied, because they're not satisfied. They want that ananda from being on the Brahman platform. But the point is if you want Krishna's happiness, then your being on the Brahman platform is progressive. Right? But if you want the happiness of Brahman, it's a nicer, higher grade happiness than the happiness of bhukti, of material. But they're both material, in that you're want happiness separate from the Lord. Does that make sense? Okay. Again, at the initial stages of bhajana kriya, meditation on the Supreme Lord is in little flashes and is always intruded upon by material thoughts. You know, everything's going great and then something just crashes in, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, like that, oh, the deity is so nice and this and the kirtan, and did I turn off the gas? you know, it's like, you know. So that's the material thoughts. In nishta, the dhyana, meditation, is hardly interrupted. In the stage of ruchi, the meditation is for longer periods and without external interruptions. It'll just be there, or just, you know, looking at your service and, you know, doing your service. But there's no material distractions.
Does this mean there's internal distractions? Like
that, or you're just, you know, focused on the service and you're not necessarily thinking of Krishna as a person or doing it for him like that, but you're doing your service. You know what I'm saying? It means you can still be in the neutral state performing devotional service. It doesn't have anything wrong with it. What we're saying is it doesn't. The positive isn't there.
So the dynamic. Attention to piety and
yeah, no, it's not necessarily. It's just, you know, it's there. Stage of ruchi, the meditation is for longer periods and without external interruptions. In asakti, the meditations are deep and profound. And in the bhava stage, the Supreme Lord appears immediately in the meditation. So they're deep and proud, and then he appears, he's there. Finally, in praying, exchanges with the Supreme are constant, direct, and personal. Right. So this is what's bringing one through. Like that. So this, yes?
As we were reading those descriptions on prema, the devotee has like great desire to see the Lord. And I was thinking like, whole selfless love that elevates.
But why seeing is not. Why would that be self full?
Why isn't?
No, you have to explain why. Why would it be? What's the problem? It means, if you see the person, you can do something for them. If you don't see the person, harder to do something for them.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Great.
Just that's his mission here.
Personally, I would take that to mean that the effort of personal interaction can be, you know, quite an endeavor. So why not just, you know, hang back and just, you know, do the needful and not get too, you know, over the top with the whole emotional exchange kind of scene. You know what I'm saying? I would take it that statement is mixed with, you know, gyan. Does that make sense? The point is that here they're constantly, directly, and seeing the Lord, constant, direct, and personal. It's almost like the thing, you know. It's constant, direct, and personal. Like that. You know? Yeah, so what is so therefore, if he's there, then you can do service for him personally. It's not that you can't do it in the meditation. There'll be plenty of that when he's not there. But it's that you can do it. But when it's not there, then, you know, you don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, if you sit down with devotees and taking prasad is really nice experience, then you like to sit with the devotees and eat. But if you've never had that experience, then, you know, sitting there with your, you know, little bottle of Planters peanuts and a can of condensed milk and a block of, you know, Philadelphia cream cheese, you know, sitting, you know, around the corner behind the, you know, the Tesco's with, you know, next to the garbage cans is fine. You know, why do we have to get into this whole trip? You know, everybody in the van, everyone sit down. You're like, hey, I'm fine. You understand? Because the taste is there, then one sees what levels of exchange can be there. Because on your own, then basically you're dependent upon yourself. Though it says here in Bhava, then the Lord appears. So then you start getting that exchange. But then here at Prema, it's personal.
By Prasanam and Mahaprasanam.
Yes.
Maharaj, when the Buddha is talking to Uddhava in that conversation, the Buddha and Uddhava,
okay.
The Buddha, he enters in ecstasy because he recognizes the Lord remembering him when he was leaving.
Hmm.
So that personal element of remembering,
yeah.
Remembering him.
Yeah, no, it means a lot. Yeah, that's right. If you can do that, that's good. Like Prabhupada is very expert. He knew everybody's name. So even he had seen it for years, when he'd meet them, he would say their name. It would always impress them. Of course, you have to have a good memory. Probably memory and understanding the benefit. Okay, so here he says he's brought everything down, that the whole process basically is converting false ego to real ego. False identity, that I am the the controller, and, you know, and the attachment, and I'm the enjoyer, to I am Krishna's servant, and I am trying to create pleasure for Krishna. The attachment is for Krishna. The identification is as servant of Krishna. Right? And then showing how one moves through these stages by sadhu sangha. But we see is what's happening here is the deepening of focus and taste in devotional service, and giving up the desires and attachments of the material endeavor. But it doesn't mean that one gives up utilizing it, interaction with it. It's just that it doesn't have any need. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, we use all the kitchen paraphernalia when we're cooking for Krishna, but in the spiritual world, they don't use any. It just all happens. No, they have pots and pans and their fires and their spoons and, you know, all these, they dress for the kitchen and all these different elements. And it's all there. But the point is it's just the utility. You can make nice things for Krishna with the kitchen. Right? You know, here it's that, you know, it's my kitchen and they identify with it and all these different things. Does that make sense? Good. Okay. Okay, that excerpts. So this is section B. Appears, right? Section A was this, mm-hmm. Right? This was quite a big, quite big actually. Development from Shraddha Prema. Okay, development from Shraddha to Prema. Okay, from the Adau Shraddha, and then he's using an A, chapters 2 to 8 of Maturya Kadambini. And now B, excerpts from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Sri Bhajana Rahasya. Because so Bhajana Rahasya goes on the, it's going on the Shikshastaka, on the 8 verses of the Shikshastaka, right? It also deals with the Shraddha to Prem, right? It's also dealing with the Lord's pastimes, right? The different times of the day. So all these different elements. Right, so that's why the man bhajan at the end of night, shraddha, faith. So it's overlapping all these different things in one section. So you can see all these connections that are found in all these different literatures in one section, and make the connections between them. So when you're dealing with one, you can see all the others. Does that make sense? So this other aspect of intelligence, generally speaking, because We're in the material world. We don't distinguish between matter and spirit. So that's the first thing of intelligence, is distinction. When you can tell the difference between matter and spirit, right? Then within the spirit, then you show all the connection. You know what I'm saying? If you don't deal with something properly, you have to analyze it and break it down. Once you understand it, then you can work with it all together. Does that make sense? So, bhajana kriya. Now, bhajana at the end of night, shraddha, faith. Bhajana at the end of night means when Radha and Krishna wake up in the morning. Right? What happens between when they wake up, Mangalartik, going back to their houses, and going back to their houses, going to sleep. Right? By chanting the holy name, the mirror of one's heart, and it's also then your Cheto Darpana Marjana. Okay? By chanting the holy name, the mirror of one's heart is cleansed, as stated in the Shikshastaka 1. Glories to the Sri Krishna Sankirtana, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years together. Thus the fire of conditional life, of repeated birth and death, is extinguished. Right? Because what we're seeing there is that what's happening is as the material goes down, then one's advancing. Right? So it's right? The Samkirtan Muni is the waxing moon that spreads the white lotus of good fortune for all living entities, right? Because through that you get the association of devotees, take up devotees, so the good fortune. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss, so this taste comes up, right? What we were seeing before. It helps us to have a taste, and it helps us taste the full nectar for which we are always anxious, right? Because what we're looking for is always Krishna, right? But we don't know, we're looking otherwise. So the Samkirtan mission, that's what it does, right? By performing congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, one can destroy the sinful condition of material existence, purify the unclean heart, and awaken all varieties of devotional service, right? So you're getting rid of anartas, you're becoming steady, you're getting a taste, right? And awaken all varieties of devotional service, right? So does that make sense? So we see we have the material faith, that faith is going down, so we awakens the spiritual. So by taking up the association of devotees, which increases, the material taste goes down. When it gets to a certain level, then the spirituals can start coming up. But the constant all the way through is the association of devotees and the performance of devotional activities. Right, but basically you can see at nishta is where it's gone down, where then it can start to come up. Yes? No? Okay. By performing congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, one can destroy the sinful condition of material existence, purify the unclean heart, and awaken all varieties of devotional service. Right? So we see the three levels. Get rid of the sinful, purify, you know, it means come to the neutral stage, and then awaken all varieties of devotional service. Right? So again, you're dealing with material, spiritual, devotional. Right? Does that make sense? Here's spiritual meaning that neutral state of just, you know, the Brahman state. Not spiritual meaning not. I mean, spiritual meaning not material, yes, but not when devotional mean not material and, you know, devotional. The result of chanting is that one awakens his love for Krishna and tastes transcendental bliss. Ultimately, so that's the result, not that it gets rid of material existence. That'll just go on its own. That's secondary, right? As it said, when the devotional creeper comes up, the main thing is that devotion, but it also, knowledge and detachment are automatic. The first two leaves deal with that. The result of chanting is that one awakens his love for Krishna and tastes transcendental bliss. Ultimately, one attains the association of Krishna and engages in his devotional service, as if immersing himself in a great ocean of love. Right? Awakens his love for Krishna. So here we can look at love for Krishna means you have the element that love for Krishna meaning prema. But also here is because we see is that this is dealing with the process of going through. Awakening the love for Krishna is our love now is being covered by it's being applied anywhere but Krishna. Right? So it becomes, it's covered. It becomes all these other kinds of elements, and the most prominent being lust, right? So awakening one's love for Krishna means you're awakening that love is being directed towards Krishna as opposed to the material energy. So it's not, we're on prema to be able to connect this love to Krishna, right? But it's just beginning. We occasionally, it's there, it's not necessarily steady, and then slowly it gets more steady, and slowly then the take, like that. Does that make sense? So then that love comes to the point where it's fully in its natural state at prema. Right? Before that, it still hasn't been fully brought to its potential. Right? It's in its potent state in bhava. Right? But it actually acting in its what it can be, that's then prema. Does that make sense? Right?
It was also, we can take also inspiration, seeing like from the previous description how chanting was the essential item of developing love of God. So mm-hmm. just trying to take, get used to chanting.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Two. Bhajan in the morning. Sadhu Sange Anartha Nivritti, removal of anarthas in association of devotees, right? Because without the association of devotees, technically you won't remove anarthas. That's why Nirjan Bhajan is not recommended, right? Means technically is that the Uttamadhikari, then there's no big deal in Nirjan Bhajan. It won't affect him, but no one else will get benefit, right? But for anybody who's not, then Nirjan Bhajan means how are you going to do accepting the association? And the reason that the Uttamadhikari doesn't have a problem in Nirjan Bhajan here is because through meditation he's associating with the Lord's eternal associates, you know. So he is in Sadhu Sangha, right? Just we don't see it, you know, like Gaur Kishore Das, Babaji Maharaj is saying. And it's so hard to find Vaishnav, so why are you going across the river and going to all these different places like that? And then he took a few bamboos, stuck them in the ground, put his cheddar over the top and said, this is a sabha for Vaishnavas, you know, like that. And then, you know,
This is a what?
Sabha means a assembly hall for Vaishnavas. And then he started chanting and dancing around it, you know, to, you know, in respect for the Vaishnavas assembled there, you know. So it's like, we're not seeing them, but he is, so, you know. Okay, so bhajan in the morning will mean when the Lord wakes up and has his breakfast, right? Until basically, yeah, wakes up, has his breakfast, yeah, and then goes out, you know, goes with the cowherd boys and leaves, you know?
6 to 8?
A little later, probably a little later. They'll all be done in muhurtas, 48 minute, but it's the groupings of the how many of those will be in it, because the gopis always get more, like that. But because he'll get up, he'll tend the cows, he'll have breakfast, he'll take some rest, and then they'll congregate to go out, you know, like that. Mother Yashoda will have so many comments on why he should stay and someone else can go. You know, and so until Balaram and all the other older cowherd boys come, you know, with swords and shields and clubs and all weaponry, then she agrees, okay, then he'll be protected, so then they can go out to the forest. Like that. So that all goes on here. So Sadhu Sangha Anartha Nivritti, a removal of anarthas in association of devotees. There's no question of an auspicious or inauspicious time for chanting the holy names. The holy names are invested with all potencies as described in Shastra. Right? O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, in your holy name there is all good fortune for the living entity, and therefore you have many names, such as Krishna and Govinda, by which you expand yourself. You have invested all your potencies in those names, and there are no hard and fast rules for remembering them. My dear Lord, although you bestow such mercy upon the fallen conditioned souls by liberally teaching your holy names, I am so unfortunate that I commit offenses while chanting the holy name, and therefore I do not achieve attachment for chanting. Right? Because we're saying that taste, because of the material, the offenses in that, then the material still being there, then the taste doesn't come up. As we see, is the attachments have to reduce to the point where the taste can come up. Right? Because taste means it's prominent. Right? You know, if you taste something, it's kind of nice, kind of not nice. It's not that you're... But if the taste is more than any other inconveniences, then that's the prominent element. Right? You know, you like eating, it tastes really great, it's fabulous, it gives you a bad stomach, but as long as the taste is the greater element, you keep eating it. When the bad stomach is the prominent, you stop eating it. You know?
Not always. Yeah, always.
Depends on how extreme.
Yeah, exactly.
How do I say? Because people there... Oh, okay. Auspicious, there's no auspicious or inauspicious time because everything is Krishna. He's always present. It's always him and his potency. So he can always be approached. Right? In his pastimes, then he has these times. So certain things at certain times. But in his names, there's no restriction. So that's the thing about the Sankirtan. Always one can chant and be absorbed and be in association with Krishna. But even in his pastimes, there's only certain times. Right? At bhajan, at the end of night, there is only gopis. There is no parental wrath, friendship, servitorship, you know, nothing like that, you know. Maybe a few birds like that, but that's it. The bhajan in the morning, there are no gopis. You're right. The cowherd boys, I mean, they can come and cook breakfast, but they can't get too involved. So now is parental rasa, right? The friends come over, watch them dress and everything, take breakfast with them like that. But the gopis just, they can, you know, some of them can help serve. But generally they have to stand on the side and watch, right? Because Nanda Baba and his brothers are there and the cowherd boys. So, you know, it's a real family. It's a man's scene, right? So they're not there. But the cowherd boys are there, but they can't be crazy. Right? They have to be very formal. Their mother just showed his house. You understand? So everybody has their time. But holy name can be approached at any time. So that's why it's so perfect.
The name is more merciful than Krishna himself.
Yes, but Krishna and his name are non-different, so...
There was a pastime when Krishna was on a scale with his name and...
How did you put the name on the scale?
It was written on the leaf.
Oh, okay. Then that's it. Oh, no, that was the thing is when... What was that? I mean, it was just him and the name?
Yes.
Okay, because there's some other pastime where... Oh, that's another thing. That was a tulsi leaf.
Yeah, I know.
They were putting so much more and more and more. Oh, that was, yeah, also in eating and in tulsi leaf, but also I think it was a time when they were putting Krishna in gold and jewels, and they're putting more and more, and they couldn't get the weight. And I think Rukmini came along and put a tulsi leaf. Like that, yeah. Yes. So these things are there. But that doesn't mean that one's not interested in meeting Krishna as a person. Just have to make sure. Yeah, then we'll just chant.
Just for the record.
Sit in our bus alone.
You want to meet Krishna? No, I have rounds to do.
Yeah. You have to watch out for that one. It's
yeah, this is pastime with the Brahmanas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have that. It's like Mangalarti is going on, and chanting is going on.
Yeah.
Gayatri, Tulsi Arti, and all the Brahmins are chanting the Gayatri facing the east, you know, doing all the holy stuff. 3. Bhajan at forenoon. Nishta Bhajan. Bhajan with firm faith, right? So before he put the Sadhu Sangha, Anartha Nivriti, right? And now he's put Nishta. So these two are put together, right? And sometimes it even shows more, depending upon. Remember, we were saying is that that attraction of the taste, because the taste will start down in nishta, and also the attachment is starting in ruchi, and so you can also shift everything down one. So you either have like this, clearly like this. This one is very obvious. The other one are subtleties. Knowing the subtleties, then you can also pick up something from here. That does that make sense?
It seems like the difference between the beginning of a level and the end of a level is greater than when you're shifting a level.
Yeah. Right? Well, the end of one is the beginning of another.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
See the same in like in astronomy. The end of the Dasa period, the last planet, the next planet will have the same flavor. So the beginning of one, when let's say you're in Rahu, going into Saturn. So the last stage will have flavors of Saturn, though it's still Rahu, and the first stages of Saturn will have the flavors of Rahu. So you always get that. It's like the Sunday, the day and the night, are clear, but the twilight has both. And as it just starts, it's more day than night. But as it's just ending, it's more night than day. So like that. So then each one has that overlap. That's why the previous explanations have something of validity for the next one, and vice versa. There's elements because it's the next one that. The next one that makes the preceding one progress. You know what I'm saying? Like that, yes.
Jiva Goswami has this nice argument that while it is so hard to comprehend by material logic, there is levels overlapping. Because this is material logic, material transformation means that you get milk and then you boil the milk to here. Or something like
right.
And then you don't have milk.
Uh-huh.
If you boil it further, you don't have the cure.
Mm-hmm.
This is material transformation, but spiritual means that the milk is still there and you get more.
You have the milk and everything else. So you can have your cake and eat it. But only in the spiritual world. Yeah, so we're always used to that the one disappears and then the next one, so that overlap becomes a so that's why he's discussing prema, but talking of things going all the way down to ruchi. And where he's talking about bhava, the same thing. So many times in bhava, it goes all the way down to shraddha, right? Because there your first three stages of bhava sadhana begin with that shraddha. That you have faith, you hear about your position, as servant of Krishna, right? You get adjusted to that, and you take up the practices, and therefore start to meditate on Krishna, do things for Krishna. So therefore, then the meditation becomes mentioned from Shraddha. That's where the meditation that's perfect in prema has started in Shraddha, right? Also the identity, everything like that. So some of these things are very broad. Some of it's just for the next level. Some of it is just for the next level, but then that whole concept of that group is then revisited at the higher level. The anishta, nishta, and ruchi, you see the same thing happening in bhava. Right? The distracted meaning you're not attracted to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Your taste then for serving Krishna. So it has its the mechanics are the same, but the definition of the position is slightly different. Right? It's like what do you call it? Synonyms. They basically mean the same thing, but they're applied in different situations. Right? Therefore, the definitions come out slightly different.
Karma yoga,
yes. Same thing. The karma, jnana, yes. Buddhi, bhakti. Technically, it's all one process. It's just that when its connotation is you have material desires that you're engaging in our service, it's called karma yoga. Yes. You have the knowledge and everything engaged in it. It's called jnana yoga. Like that. So if you're combining those, that's buddhi yoga. Right? But it's still stemming from the conditioned nature. When there's no more conditioned nature, then it becomes, you know, the bhava. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
In text, these are going to be seen as sanghatis.
Yes, that would be good. You can see Masangati, because it connects to one stage of the next, but it also puts it in the context of the whole thing. So you're going to get both those. And much of the time, it connects you with other scriptures also. Right? So that's what evidences are. It connects it to other scriptures. You know, so this Vajranahasya is where he gives all the evidences. It means here we're just getting the translations, but it's just shlokas, the whole thing. Like that. Oh, yeah. Somebody, I thought it was 10:02, but it's after. Okay? So we'll start with this. Yeah, come on.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jayatai Gaurav ki.